Welcome to our 5th anniversary extravaganza. That's right. This completely inept podcast of the cinema has somehow made it to 5 years on the internet.
To celebrate, Alonzo Duralde, who is the reviews editor of The Wrap and makes regular appearances on What the Flick, has popped a bottle of champagne brought to us by our special guest, who will be named in a moment.
Yes.
And we are now drinking it
with Dave White, film critic for linoleum-knife.com, who's currently on hiatus while he finishes his book, but he'll be back soon, he swears.
We're drinking that champagne out of jelly glasses because we have some champagne flutes that are dirty.
Yes.
From another champagne event.
Yes. It's been very champagne-y up in here lately.
Gary Cotty.
It's the champagne room, you might say.
Gary, friend and neighbor Gary Cotty came home from shooting Banshee.
Yes.
And has had this incredibly expensive bottle of champagne waiting for him.
In our fridge.
In our fridge for like 6 months.
Yeah.
We did not give him the expensive bottle of champagne. We're a red Kool-Aid kind of house. But he doesn't have a refrigerator.
Well, he's got one of those little box dorm size jobs.
And so he left it in our fridge. And then this just the other day, we drank the champagne to celebrate him coming home. Which, by the way, the more expensive the champagne, I just learned this.
The better it tastes.
The better it tastes. Because I'm not really down so much for champagne all the time. It tastes harsh to me.
It's because you've been drinking the cheap stuff.
I've barely been drinking it at all. Anyway, our champagne flutes are not clean.
No.
Because it's been a real busy week and we haven't washed them yet.
But we're jelly glass people. It's fine.
Well, yeah. I mean,
today we are.
Today we are.
And we have to thank for this, and really to thank for the existence of this show, our guest today, the wonderful, the luscious Gray Drake.
Oh, you guys, I'm a jelly glass kind of girl.
Welcome.
Cheers to you. I am so proud of you. I am so honored to be here.
You invented us.
Yeah.
That is more than kind of you and completely untrue.
Here's the thing.
It is actually sort of true.
Here's a quick burst of linoleum knife history. Dave White and I did not know what a podcast was.
I knew what a podcast was.
We had a vague
of
notion.
The L Word.
Yes, okay. We had a vague notion of what a podcast was. We'd never listened to one. We'd certainly never been on one.
Yeah, I hadn't listened
we
to
We didn't
any.
Know how one accessed them or anything. One night, I'm at CineFamily. I believe it was the night that they screened, it was like some weird double feature of like Cruising and Caged Men or something, like two really bizarre gay films of yore. And a very excitable Garyana Abeda came rushing up to me, and she's like, "Dude, we've been trying to get you on our show, on our podcast for ages." And I'm like, "Great, who are you and what's a podcast?" And it turned out that Garyana and Gray co-hosted a show called The Popcorn Mafia, which was burning up the web. And
it's dead now.
And they came according. And so I did their show and had a blast. And then Dave did their show and had a blast. And then I think we both did it a couple times.
And I often think back to that, the first time that I met each one of you, and how magical it was for different reasons. And even upon those, the first meeting, the wonder and glory that you brought into my life, which has never stopped. Alonzo showed up with snacks.
As you did today.
And so today, it's the least I could do.
Yeah, the circle is complete.
And
I brought cookies when I came over.
You brought cookies, and we had long conversation about the quality of throws.
Yeah.
In my home.
I remember that conversation very, very distinctly because I was trying to get you, immediately upon meeting you, I was trying to get you weaned off the Snuggie Slanket.
Remember that moment?
The evil Snuggie Slanket situation that overtook the country. When
I'm very impressionable.
When in reality, if you're going to have a comfy throw in your house, it needs to be soft and beautiful,
right,
and needs to be something made of
a natural fiber,
of something real.
Right. Yes. And I never forgot that, and I still don't have any cashmere throws, but maybe someday, here's to hoping.
Have you at least upgraded to cotton? Because those slankets are made out of, like, whatever airplane blankets are made
out of. Well, the slanket has gone the way of the ghost, so it is no longer in our home, okay. So that's something.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. And I love everything you guys do. I'm your biggest fangirl, is the thing. And I think so often about how there are so many people that do what we do now.
Flying everywhere this fly is.
There's a fly, and I'm going to say what I have to say, fly. There are so many people that do what we do, and it's so accessible to have a podcast now or to, you know, write online.
Yeah, everyone has a podcast now.
Everybody's a film critic.
Not everybody has a fifth damn anniversary, I'll tell you that much. And the thing is that but there are people and there is work that I find inspiring and that gives me something to aspire to and to class me up because God knows I need it. And you guys do that work. I make sure to read everything that you guys write, and I make sure to listen to what you guys say, because I think that you guys are among the people that really class this joint up, and I'm so proud to know you. Well, I love you guys, and thank you for everything. I mean, it's just the greatest.
Stop making me have feelings.
So here's some snacks, okay?
Well, I have to say, you have redefined the game when it comes to the celebrity interview, because that is one of the most painful things on earth in the hands of an amateur, but you have turned it around and chopped it and screwed it and made it into a whole nother thing. And so the stuff that you're doing on Rotten Tomatoes, the way you disarm the professionally famous and get them to say stuff that's actually worthwhile is a treat to enjoy.
I actually watch junket interviews now because you do them.
Yeah.
Before you started doing them, I didn't watch them ever.
You guys warned me about them.
We warned you about going into that line of business.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think, saying something to you like, be cooler than everyone. Please, please be cooler than everyone.
That is what you said.
And you've he just said, you've raised the bar on an entertainment level, because they were never entertaining before. They were perfunctory.
And they were never going to be news.
Well, right? No, we're not curing cancer. It's like you give 4 minutes and there's a certain, the environment is so strange that you have to do something that busts apart the strangeness of it all and doesn't pretend to be something it's not, I don't think. I don't consider myself a journalist. I think that term is funny.
Yeah, you're an entertainer, but you, a lot of people I think are aspiring to do that and not hitting the mark. And I mean, frankly, your Let's Be Cops interview was better than Let's Be Cops.
Yeah. Please look that up on YouTube, you guys, because it's one of my, when I'm having a sad day or I feel like maybe I've missed the mark and I should stop doing this, I watch that interview and it cheers me up so much.
Oh, come on. You know the one you watch. You watch the Ryan Gosling one.
I do love that one. And the nice part is that now I've been doing these a few years and now people know, they know me, using air quotes.
Right.
So they are more familiar with what I am going to do. And so when I walk into a room with Channing Tatum and I'm wearing a full muscle bodysuit with jean shorts and a bow tie, he's like, hey, Greg, what's up? It's like not weird anymore. So everybody's coming around. And I think, like, if I think you guys would not think what I'm doing is funny, then I don't do it.
Oh, I thought if I could take that kind of responsibility.
I think that's a great litmus.
Because you said, don't be the person that calls the talent by their first names.
Yes. Thank you for that.
And I remember everything you guys told me and live that and gravitate towards the people who naturally also follow the Dave Lonzo rules.
Yeah. Well, you know, I give Dave White a hard time every week, or not every week, but many weeks.
Every day.
For not knowing how to do all these things and what gets plugged in where and how this gets onto the internet machine. But I only know it because Gray Drake taught me. So.
Oh, and the student has become the teacher.
Kumbaya, lady.
I can't be
taught.
Listen.
Or tamed.
Yep. Nope. You can't be tamed. And you get the thing is, like, everybody has the stuff that fits properly into their brain box.
Yeah, this does not.
Yeah, no. Square peg, round hole. It's fine.
It's
that's why you guys are the perfect team.
Look at all the wires. I mean, look, that's not too many wires.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's not for everybody.
Yeah. You would need an equivalent of, like, the Bibbs & Whitney setup. Like, the one giant omnidirectional microphone, one cable into the laptop.
Right.
Bam, done.
Everybody got their thing.
Even that would confuse me.
Probably.
Because it'd be like, what computer hole do I put the thing into?
So we're going to do a quick run through of the week's movies, such as they are, but we're really just here to kind of, you know, wallow in our awesome moments.
Yes, you deserve it, and we're going to eat cookie butter cups.
And of course, share memories from listeners who were kind enough to write in with their own thoughts about what they remember about the last 5 years and what moments have stayed with them.
I'm glad they did, because I don't remember anything.
Yeah, it's kind of a blur for me, too.
After we do an episode, I
flush.
within days, someone will say, oh, you said a really funny thing. And well, what was that? And then they say it to me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, man, I guess I said that. Like, I don't remember it at all.
Well, not everything can be it's fun to enjoy.
Well, yeah, that was... classic me.
Do you want to maybe read a couple of so we're not just doing a big blob of them at the end, read some of the emails now?
And I'm gonna do one of them right now.
Okay, and then we'll do a movie, and then we'll do another email, and we'll just see how it goes.
I love it.
The best LK moment is the subject of this email. This is from Karen. Hello, gentlemen. My favorite moment of the last 5 years. Here's the quote. You called me sweetie. Who said that to who?
You did. I called you sweetie, and then and in the middle of some long thing, and then you went, you called me sweetie.
It was perfect in every way. You two in playful disagreement. Man, it's not playing. We're not playing.
You can't see the weapons in our hands.
Alonzo's exasperation and the fact that you two are a couple who love each other to death.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Death. Thanks for everything. That's from Karen.
Oh, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
So our brand is crisis is kind of not good at all.
You guys are one of those that didn't like it. I had a good time watching it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
What's your problem?
Wow, well, let's...
I'm going to turn the table. What's yours?
What if it isn't?
I am not very smart. So, politically, a movie like this impressed... It's not that it impressed me. It's just a movie like this made an impression on me because I enjoyed the fact that Sandra Bullock and Billy Bob Thornton as these... political advisors and spin doctors and what have you in South America, I enjoyed seeing them spin those campaigns. That's what I was enjoying watching.
That's my favorite part of the movie, definitely. This movie is based on the inspired by or suggested by or whatever, the documentary of the same name from 10 years ago. And it's directed by David Gordon Green. It's written by the guy who wrote The Men Who Stare at Goats.
This movie has
was terrible.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one because it was also, I didn't know he wrote it, but I knew it was produced by George Clooney and Grant Heslov, who did that movie. And I thought, has that Men Who Stare at Goats things happening where, like, they think they're being funny and political, but they're just not really being much of either.
Regarding the inspired by, this movie has about as much in common with the documentary of the same name as... my book called Exile in Guyville has to do with Liz Phair's album. Exile in Guyville. Not a lot.
Not
a lot. Yeah.
So yeah, the premise is that Sandra Bullock is a somewhat retired political consultant who's brought in to work on a campaign in Bolivia for this guy who has a former president who wants to get in office again, but he's widely disliked. He's like 28 points behind the polls. And then she gets talked into taking the gig, and then only to find out that her main rival down there, from the leading candidate, is Billy Bob Thornton, who the two of them have a tortured, checkered past.
Yes.
Yeah, when they're kind of like pranking each other and sort of outdoing each other on the field, I thought that was really funny. Those are the best parts of the movie.
They have a weird energy together. Like, yeah. It's very, I was like, ooh, Sandy, you're so Angelina.
I liked them together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though he's basically doing James Carville again, because that's who he played the James Carville role in Primary Colors.
Right, right.
What bugged me about the movie is that it's a movie about people who do terrible things for a living. And yet, it comes to one of them as news that they do terrible things for a living. You know, we have to go through the moment of Sandra Bullock having this crisis of conscience. It's like, honey, you knew the second you got on the plane what you were going to be called upon to do and what your whole career is based on. And why now suddenly that's a bad thing? I was reminded, remember that scene in Broadcast News where the anchors are all standing in the hallway and they're like kind of lobbing ethical dilemmas at each other? Like, oh, would you tell a source you loved her if you needed the information? Oh yeah, sure, no problem. none of them cared.
Right.
And I would have liked more of that feeling in this movie, because I think if you could start there and then move past it, you could actually do something really dark and interesting about politics.
You're not alone. I mean, that was Matt at Rotten Tomatoes and I have talked a lot about that exact thing, because he mentioned that he thought Wag the Dog was a lot more effective.
Yeah, totally.
Because it was committed to the comedy and then revealed something through the insane comedy.
Right.
Whereas this movie, it turned schmaltzy at the end. Here's what, this is where I'm at mentally right now. I was relieved that it went schmaltzy, because it made me feel better about our world. I was relieved. And so I can't necessarily argue that that makes it a very strong film.
No, then you're everything wrong with the movie.
And the world. How about both? I thought that Anthony Mackie and Dowd were underused.
Yes. And Scoot McNairy and Zoe Kazan.
I thought they were all underused. I thought that this was a movie just about the two of those people.
Right.
So that bothered me, because they were a great cast and they all had these great moments.
Yeah.
But just moments. And they were just drops.
And they have to trot out this like sweet Polly Pureheart character, this like super naive young guy who really believes in the candidate. And the candidate lets him down. But the candidate lets him down in such an unbelievable about face like way that would never, that somebody that smart would cover his tracks better.
And something that tells you another thing about where I'm at mentally, I spent the entire movie thinking that that idealistic sweet kid was going to murder the politician. I was just waiting. I was just waiting for him to pull out a knife, and he pulled out a friggin' photo of him like as a kid with the politician. And I was like, oh, I thought, is he going to murder him with the photo?
Like at the corner?
That's going to be difficult.
Like that one random character in Nashville.
I thought it was going to be all like friggin' Manchurian Candidate.
So you're sweet and also crazy.
And congratulations on getting engaged, by the way.
Is it weird that ever since we got engaged, I just keep ending every sentence with, this is what you get.
You signed up for this.
Right? No turning back now. And also, I will pretend to take the ring off and throw it as far as possible. Just if, like, he would say no. Just the word no. Like, not even if it's a disagreement. Just like, it's a fun game.
This is a punctuation for arguments. Oh, yeah.
And I do that, too. But I liked the movie. It kept me laughing, and I love David Gordon Green, and so I'm really prejudiced. Like, I really want his movies to be great.
I'm a big fan of his, and I was ready to.
Yeah, his name being on it raised my expectations.
Right?
But he's, you know, it's funny, like, I remember when we were talking about What the Flick, Christy said, like, oh, it's, you know, it's so hard to sort of put this into his, you know, filmography. And I'm like, well, the whole point of his filmography is that nothing fits there.
Right.
Like, this is a guy that went from George Washington to The Sitter. Like, he's all over the place.
With a stop at Pineapple Express.
Exactly.
As your Highness.
Right. His brand is Crisis. You know, like, he's all over the map. And that's what's interesting about him, that you can't really pigeonhole what a David Gordon Green movie is. But I don't think this is one of the good ones. You know, I mean, like, I remember when I saw Joe...
I love Joe. A lot
I liked about that one. I kind of felt third act, you could sort of feel it kind of getting in a weirdly conventional thing that you know, which again, it's disappointing for him because he'll make a movie like Prince Avalanche, for instance, or you know, All the Real Girls that doesn't sort of follow the set beats of a movie, you know. I wanted to like this more. There were things in it that I did like, but overall it didn't land for me.
I like Sandra Bullock having personality. I like her being sassy. And she's all of those things in this movie. She's just, God, gosh, she's just so relatable.
I am an enormous...
Sandy B fan.
Sandy B fan.
You're Texan, it's a law.
Yeah.
There's been a whole to-do about how, this role was written for a man, and then she wanted to play it, and they rewrote it. And I thought, I bet when it was a man, they didn't fall down so much.
That Miss Congeniality falling down
stuff.
I feel like this is a movie about cynicism that is itself cynical.
Yeah. It either assumes a naivete on the part of the audience.
It absolutely assumes a naivete on the part of the audience by giving us the ending it gives us.
Yeah.
The soft, you know, she's actually nice. I'm just going to spoil it. The soft ending where she's actually sort of like, I'm going to be nice now.
Yeah, she has her conscience emerges.
So that you can leave feeling better about the world.
Right.
Is
gray.
That is a cynical move on the part of the film, and it kills the movie.
Well, they did a test thing of the film, and they just showed it to Gray. And then she, like, turned the knob all the way down, so they had to completely rewrite the ending.
I was like, DGG...
Could she be nicer?
Could she just... I just want her to smile more.
Could there be a trying on clothes montage? Where she wears a bunch of those, like, those knit shepherd caps that they all wear in South America with the flaps.
And then it's just like a Spanish version of Walking on Sunshine.
Exactly.
The movie worked for me. I'm really surprised that it has such a low score on the tomato meter. That's a shame.
Yeah, it's in like, what, the low 30s?
It's like 30. Yeah, it's like 30%. I'm surprised. And God, has Warner Brothers been having a terrible year. Yes. Holy mackerel.
Well, so has Paramount. Oh, the other night when I was posting my Scouts Guide review and I pulled their page up of, you know, their publicity page with all their stills and stuff. Ever since Selma, I was like, oh yeah, that was them? Oh, that was them? Oh, that was this year? Like, just, you know, all these very forgettable films.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. It's Universal and Disney. They're kicking everybody's butt right now.
I can't say, though, that I'm totally, not on board with the low tomato meter rating, only because ever since Junket Interviews, all the way through the premiere and everything he's done, Billy Bob Thornton has insisted on wearing one god sleeveless t-shirt to do the promo. I swear to God, it's the same shirt. It drives me bonkers.
Write that down so you can bleep her swears.
Sorry. It is so awful, and it was worth
clean podcast, it's worth gray.
It's worth making Alonzo work harder so I can express my outrage. Okay.
Was he also only eating foods of one color or whatever?
God. And it's just like, I shook his hand and just kind of wanted to be like, what's your deal, bro?
He's going to be a lot skinnier in Bad Santa 2.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. Another movie that they get to ruin for us. Don't make another one of those. Speaking of a movie that's going to have like a stupid saccharine ending because the studio is going to get involved.
I know. Right. Walk
Boo.
Away. Well, it's funny that Bad Santa is one of the few movies where the director's cut on DVD is actually the shortest one. Because he took out, like, all the nice moments. all the moments where Billy Bob Thornton is remotely nice to anyone. Out.
Ugh, Billy Bob.
Greetings, fellas. So glad you are celebrating 5 fabulous years of Linoleum Knife. Initially, I was just going to submit that episode where the two of you laughed about the identical for 90 minutes. Or That time Dave reviewed a Sandler movie by making one prolonged fart noise.
That comes up in a lot of emails.
Yeah.
But then I decided to put in slightly more effort and search my Gmail inbox to see the history of me talking to my friend Amanda. Dave delighted in her twiddle hand. I'm going to learn to read one of these days. Parenthetically, she adds, Dave delighted in her Twitter handle, Blamanda, many moons ago, and found a few gems. Come on, that's a great Twitter.
Blamanda is
great. That's a great Twitter.
Yes. It is.
Number one, she got a list from November 2011. I am listening. This is their conversation. I am listening to Dave White and Alonzo Duralde's podcast, Linoleum Knife, wherein they review The Muppets and, much to my delight, the new Cronenberg about Freud and Jung. No shocker, sounds bonkers. My favorite part was the two of them fighting about who is the loudest eater. Number two.
Linoleum-knife.com.
Number two from January 2014. See, I don't remember that at all.
Me neither, but I trust her that it happened.
From January 2014, Dave White saying, in the course of his burning questions about Love Actually, why does Dido... Three, from March 2014. I'm listening to the latest Linoleum Knife. I will likely never see Noah, but I really enjoyed the married guys talking about it, disagreeing about it. Amanda replies, let me guess. Dave, yay. Alonzo, nay. Spoiler, she was right, y'all. Four, July 2015. Revealed in this week's Linoleum Knife, Alonzo Duralde, Drew Droege, and Dave Holmes are all going to be at an Outfest bad movie night thing. So don't tell me that there isn't magic in this universe.
It was good.
In closing, you convinced the two of us to watch The Night They Took Miss Beautiful a few months ago. And for that, we'll be forever in your debt. That was some confusing, disturbing entertainment. I was also admonished not to forget that you also encouraged our first viewing. That means there were more of The Apple.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So many gifts.
Here's to many more years of hearing Alonzo say, mm-hmm. And to Dave sharing his homemaking tips. That's from Jesse. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jesse.
Jesse and Blamanda.
Forever.
What's the other movie that we saw?
Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. First of all, there's no apostrophe in that title. It's not Scout apostrophe S, not Scouts S apostrophe. There's no apostrophe in that title.
So this
there's no title in that title. There's no movie in that title.
This is one of the times, one of the many times, where I get my rap email and I click on it to see who wrote the review. And there are some people, I just close it right away.
No.
And then if it's Alonzo, I read it. And so I got my Scouts Guide email and... It was like first thing in the morning. And so it's like 6 in the morning and I'm reading it just sort of like still dazed. But as Steve sleeps peacefully like an angel next to me, there's just me going, yes, yes, yes. You nailed it in this review. Okay, so somehow I got into a press screening of this movie because I think that they thought
were hiding it from us.
Yeah, I had to see it on a Wednesday night with a lot. I couldn't bring a guest, and with a lot of people who clapped when the producers' names appeared on screen at the end. One of those screenings.
And I think they thought I was doing the junket. I tricked them. And so I'm ready for whatever. And a woman is just talking my ear off before the screening. And I'm like, you know, I have to prepare for this movie, like mentally. So could you just stop? She wouldn't stop.
Were you subjected to the 15-minute long Dylan Francis music video beforehand?
No. Tell me more.
I had to look him up online. Dylan Francis is apparently a DJ.
Okay.
For the young people.
Oh, so he's probably on the YouTube.
Yes. And he was done up all zombified.
That's on his business card. DJ for the young people.
He was all zombified and going as dead Dylan, and there was just like endless music video that involved like the floating faces of all these people that were in the movie.
No.
And it just went on and on and on, and it was really loud, and it was like, oh God, get me out of here. The movie hasn't even started yet, and I'm already eating my own face. And then the movie started, and I was like, can we have the music video back? Yeah, this is just a bleh, kind of nothing movie. It's, you know, some people have compared it to Superbad. I think it really rips
off. How dare they?
Well, in terms of that, it's shamelessly stealing from it.
Yeah.
I think it's ripping off the Cornetto trilogy, but, it, you know, right. It's six of one. Yeah, so it's these three kids, and they're scouts. They're not, you know, Boy Scouts
of
America.
There's no noun.
There's no logos or anything.
The Scouty Scouts.
The Scouty Scouts.
Yeah.
And, you know, two of them are sick of doing it, but they've only been doing it for their third guy, their nerdy friend, because his dad died, and he loves scouting.
And he's fat.
And he's fat. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to ditch him on a camping trip to go to the hot senior party that they think they've been invited to, but of course they've been given the wrong address. And, there's a zombie outbreak and stuff.
And there's a stripper who's a cocktail waitress.
Yes, who's good with a shotgun.
Stop making assumptions, boys. Okay.
This movie is directed by a gay guy.
That shocks me.
I know. And this movie, and it's like boobies and cleavage. And I'm thinking, did you like want to get your bro card stamped or something? Like, this is your way of telling Hollywood that you can be as tacky as, you know, the dudes. I don't know what that's about, Christopher Landon.
Hold on. But... equality. We've reached it.
You're right.
Yes. Love wins.
Now, gay directors can be just as bad as straight directors and have their movies made by Paramount. So good.
Hooray! Gay rights.
Hooray! Equality. Thanks, Supreme Court. So, I was like, you know what, Gray? This is just... you're not the demo for this movie. I don't
True,
like...
the demo is like 13-year-olds.
Right, yeah. And I don't like gory horror as much as I used to, because I'm starting to become a lady of that age, where it's like, I should theoretically have children, and I should be trying to protect
monster
them.
Children.
They're going to be monster children if I have them
murder,
in 6 years.
Murder babies.
So, the thought of your ostensible children is getting in the way of you enjoying, I get you.
Basically, yes. Yes. I get, you know, sense. And it's like, I wear sensible button-down shirts, you know, and I might have pink hair, but don't let it fool you. So I'm thinking, like, this isn't for me, so just relax. Oh, look, it's Cloris Leachman. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Fast forward about 25 minutes.
Oh, God.
What are they doing to Cloris Leachman?
No. It's like, why don't you just spray paint Mount Rushmore while you're at it? Like,
how
dare you deface this national treasure by, I don't even want to say what they make her do in the movie, but, and a smarter, more daring movie, like Mel Brooks could maybe get away with doing to her what they do to her, but Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse has not earned it, so.
There's nothing about this movie that hit the bullseye. Like, it wasn't.
There's one thing, Ty Sheridan.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, and the
kid who can't not give a performance.
Yes.
Right, and your statement about how he gives these great speeches but the movie doesn't deserve them is dead on, because he's always very earnest, and that's why he always works in a movie. And he was fun to watch. But I was like, I don't know, these zombies aren't that creative, and the deaths aren't that exciting. Like, I really enjoyed David Koechner as a Dolly Parton-loving zombie. I thought that was fun.
Yeah,
and Drew Drogi as a Britney Spears-loving zombie. Boy, this movie was directed by a gay guy, wasn't it?
Right. Thank God for Drew. I got so excited, I was like, wow, it's like the one scene in the movie that makes me not want to kill myself.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like there's a whole thing where they go to the hardware store and they get suited up, and it's kind of a fun montage where they're taking stuff off the shelves and strapping it on and blah, blah, blah. But, you know,
that's always a fun sequence in these movies.
Sure, but like, I mean, a weed whacker? Did we not all see Dead Alive? I mean, come on.
You know, I've seen. I've also seen a helicopter take out like 30 zombies at once, and that was thanks to 28 Weeks Later. It was a hell of a lot cooler than this.
Yeah,
I just hate it when an actual friend of ours winds up in a movie like this.
Hey, as long as the check clears,
he got paid. He'll get some residuals.
Yeah.
You know. He had nothing to do with the quality of the film.
Of
he
course.
Just took the gig.
He had his moment. It's a line in his resume and
yeah.
and a scene on his reel.
Yep.
So
And hopefully, yay, Drew. Exactly. And hopefully it leads to a lot more of them because he's like a bright, shining moment.
Yeah,
in the film.
Exactly.
Thank God.
If nothing else, you know, it's like what that Monty Python line. Her Majesty is like a stream of bat's piss. What? When all is darkness, you shine like gold.
Right. Like, there's you see him in something like that, and you're like, oh, you're so good. Oh, wait, now you're over. You're gone.
The come end. Back. We,
right. You won't come back now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was one point in the film where I was getting after the Cloris Leachman moment, I was so upset. And the one moment in the film where a girl who is at this mythic party she's going to have sex
God.
With her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And her boyfriend gets killed by a quiet zombie who has no jaw and his tongue's hanging out.
Right.
And then put two and two together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when I went, you know what? I'm going to step out for a minute. And I actually left. And I didn't come back.
You didn't miss a thing.
I didn't have to. No. I get it. It's like, I was walking in my car and I kept muttering, I get it, guys. I got it. I think I got it.
Yeah, that kill was the final straw for me. I was like, okay,
Yeah, like, it's like, what? I don't know who they made, because the movie, like you said, it's for 13-year-old boys, but it's rated R.
Right.
And they're going to have trouble getting tickets.
No, they're not.
Eh, these kids today, they're all illegally downloading
it
anyway.
With
who
their
cares?
Online ticket ordering systems.
That's right.
All right, that's well, right. Have fun. It's your funeral.
Hey, Damon Alonzo. I have been a fan of Linoleum Knife from its very inception.
Ooh. No, we're sorry. Blah. Sorry.
So I have myriad examples of great moments with Dave White and Alonzo Duralde. Below are just a few.
I was very impressed by his use of the word myriad.
Yeah, me too. Number one. Oh, he's going way back.
Oh, man.
When Dave's opening remarks about the Nutcracker in 3D.
Oh, man, that's like episode three.
Ooh.
You know how people feel about death? This has strong-armed its way into my personal parlance. Let's go back and listen to that episode. I don't remember saying that at all.
Great vocabulary on this guy.
Number two, Alonzo's recurring, facetious, and highly gay, ooh!
You do crush that.
In reaction to fancy and or brainy film critic stuff. This has become shorthand between me and my fiancé when someone says something pretentious.
I'm glad we've entered your lexicon. That's exciting.
Three, your your impassioned discussions of films like Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. And Why Did I Get Married Too have enabled me to have a riotous good time in empty theaters over the years. 4, 5, and 6 are Girl, You Got Some AIDS.
Yes! Oh, Tyler Perry.
Which was the second I walked out of Temptation.
Yeah.
Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. The first thing I did was turn on my phone and text Gray Drake.
Yup. Yes.
And I wrote Tyler Perry's Girl, You Got Some AIDS.
Steve doesn't often come to the movies with me, and he came to that. He very much enjoyed your text.
Number 5, Detwig. Number 6, Ghost Wife.
Ah, yes.
Finally, your podcast has turned me on to many other delightful podcasts, such as the B Movies Podcast.
Yay.
Yay.
And the late Popcorn Mafia.
Oh.
I have plenty more, but I don't want to take up too much time, so I know other folks have plenty to say too. Your pal, Timmy.
Yay!
Timmy! Thank you. Burnt.
Ah, you burnt.
Did you see Burnt?
And not see Burnt?
I did not see Burnt either.
Oh, lucky y'all.
Tell us about Burnt, Alonzo. Or as I like to call it, Adam Jones.
When we went to the drive-in, they had a poster up for the movie under its previous title, which was Adam Jones.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, I'll show you that picture when he's telling you what it's about. I took a picture of it.
I love Matt Singer's headline for his review on Screen Crush was, Bradley Cooper, you burnt.
It's true.
Ugh. All right, so Bradley Cooper plays Adam Jones, superstar chef, who has... Hit the skids. He was the toast of Paris, and then drugs and women and blah 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 blah. And so as penance, he's gone to New Orleans to shuck 1 million oysters. And once he finishes doing that, he then goes to London to decide to make it all happen again. And somehow everybody that he left behind in Paris is now all living in London. And that would include Maitre d' Daniel Brühl, who it turns out has always had a crush on old Adam. His former sous chef, played by Omar Sy. He meets single mom Sienna Miller, who's really good at making pasta. And his former rival is, what's his face from The Americans?
She's not very good at eating it.
Matthew Reese, and you know, it's one of those Weinstein movies with like all the fresh young faces and a super by the numbers plot. And it's written by Stephen Knight, who made Locke, which was one of my favorite movies the last few years, but he also wrote The 100-Foot Journey. Remember that one? This is another movie about somebody trying to get a Michelin star.
Helen Mirren's Michelin star.
Exactly. Well, Adam Jones wants that third one. He's going for three. Blah, 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 blah. This I really want you got to watch this on cable or something sometime, because I really want the Dave White.
I'll get around to it.
There's a lot of conversation
Because I'm such a chef. And all.
There's a lot of conversation about whether or not like using a sous vide is cheating.
It's not cheating, but it is science fiction and it's fun. Why are people opposed to fun? Why is there a sous vide backlash all of a sudden?
Well, Adam Jones has a sous vide backlash. The other character's like, shut up. It keeps the food warm until we need to serve it. You know,
what is a sous vide?
It makes your food crazy.
Remember the science oven in American Hustle, which you refer to the microwave is the science oven. This is the actual science oven. Cause what a sous vide does is it heats food to a very specific temperature, like 256 degrees, you know, like, for example, there's an exact temperature where egg whites are no longer liquid, but no longer solid. They're sort of like this between thing. And so you can, exactly. So you put an egg in a bag and you put it in the sous vide and you get it to that exact perfect temperature and you get this cool, weird texture.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment and tell you my favorite sous vide experiences. One, Alonzo's brother and sister-in-law came to visit Los Angeles, and they took us to Jose Andres.
The bazaar.
They took us to Bazaar, the Jose Andres restaurant.
Phew.
You ever been there?
No.
First of all, it's expensive as F.
Right, which is why they won't even let me through the doors.
Well, but his
that's why you take visiting relatives.
Yeah. His brother was like, take us somewhere cool and fancy. And we were like, we're going to take you someplace expensive.
Smart.
And so so we go there, and everything, it seems like, is sous-vided in this place. Like, it all comes out
foams.
In crazy configurations of, like, foams and ices and like, blocks and, you know, weird consistencies. And, you know, you get a...
potato omelet in a jar.
A potato omelet in a jar, and it's in different. It's like a parfait. It's like strata, you know.
The egg level and the potato level and the. But everything's delicious.
Yeah,
you know, it's a chemistry set, but it's delicious.
It's just kooky food, and so then, composer of Linoleum Knife theme song Blue, he and his
girlfriend Stacy,
his lady Stacy, they came over one night. And he brought his sous vide over here.
Whoa.
He owns one.
Whoa.
He owns a sous vide. And
is that what your song was composed on?
Yeah. He made these eggs. You cook them in the shell so that they are perfectly, like, soft boiled. And then you can stick your toast into the actual egg.
Get out.
Yeah.
Get out of your own house.
Crazy.
Whoa.
That's the science oven, and it's a real magical thing.
Well, this
who has a problem with that in this movie? This movie's stupid.
Well, here's the thing.
Bradley Cooper.
Chefs are, I think, these days are experiencing a bit of a trend backlash to, you know, molecular stuff. This is basically what this is. And because it was such a big honking, you know, trend for a while. Now the trend is going away, and people are like, let's just cook normally, and, you know, stuff like that, which is fine, but why not have everything? Why not have all the kinds of cooking?
Anyway, if you think the idea of the rock star chef is already insufferable from the get-go, this movie does not agree with you and thinks that you're going to love Adam Jones because he's a badass who's making the food and the yelling at the staff.
And the yelling.
No dishes safe from Adam Jones.
Exactly, yeah. And his old drug dealers want their money. And, you know, it's like, I was like, please break his creaming wrist, you know, for all I care.
Ha, ha, ha. What do you mean? He creams things by wrist?
By hand? He didn't seem cream anything. I was trying to think of what you would do with your wrist.
You can whisk something with your wrist, but you can't. You could even.
This is why I want Dave White to see this movie.
You could even, if you are Martha Stewart's off-camera assistant being edited into the shot so that it looks like Martha has done it all herself.
Right.
You could whisk an egg white into like a peak.
To make firm peaks.
Yeah. But why would you when there's a whisk attachment on your KitchenAid?
Right.
Yes.
And so, like, you can do that.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. We don't see him cream anything.
Yeah.
The chef people who did the food, one of them is Mario Batali, and the other one, I don't know his name, but he's a big deal. And so, of course, the food is very porny in this movie, and it's shot all glammed up.
Oh, I want to see it, just because I like foods.
But, it's just irritating.
I don't think Bradley Cooper, on paper, is the right person to play a role like
The weird thing is, he was on that TV show, Kitchen Confidential, where he played kind of the same thing. The chef who had a checkered past and was out of rehab and trying to blah, blah, blah. And I think much more successful then. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just that show.
More successfully, blah, blah, blah.
I don't know if that show is just better written or whatever, but yeah. And it's directed by John Wells, who, you know, king of TV, but I'm still mad about August Osage County.
Right.
I didn't see The Company Man. I heard that wasn't so hot either.
I didn't see that.
It was fine. It was fine.
So yeah.
It was fine.
Whatever.
Greetings, Alonzo and Dave. This is James. From Frisco, Texas.
Oh, hey.
Just writing in to let you know my favorite moments from the show. One, the episode where Alonzo had to describe the plot of Blended while Dave sat in the background and blew raspberries the entire time.
That stayed with a lot of people.
Here we go again, yeah. Two, Alonzo telling the story of how Dave tried to poison Alonzo with bleach.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that at all.
I'm sure you did it, but I don't remember what the story was.
Three, and maybe because I had
James,
bleached.
James, be more specific.
Possibly I had bleached the sink.
Could be.
And you were griping about.
Well, and you'd done it like on food or something.
No. I had not done it on food. Three, anytime the people who like a specific terrible movie are told that they are bad people. Yeah, sometimes we do that. Oh, well. Thank you, James.
Also opening this week in New York, but not here yet, is have you seen Gaspar Noé's Love?
I haven't seen it because I kept missing it. And I was really desperate to see it only because the last one that he did when I watched it made me walk out of the theater going, "Burr?"
Enter the Void. The incredible Enter the Void.
Enter the Void, which I was convinced was about like summiting, you know, Everest. And it was not about that.
Enter the Void is so great.
I have never seen Enter the Void. I was sitting in the other room while Dave was watching it on our TV. Just the audio disturbed me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was so stroby or something was going on. I was like, what's going on in there? I'm feeling very uncomfortable. And that's not even seeing it, just hearing it. So,
it's just hearing
know.
It. He's an interesting filmmaker. He's one of those. I'm not surprised that you like him, Dave
White. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Along with the Boon Mi guy. You an artsy mo.
Api Chapong Virasethakul.
Yeah.
I stopped myself from swearing.
I like Gaspar Noé because he does exactly as he pleases, and he is predictably provocative. Mm-hmm. I guess that if you're going to complain about anything, it would be the fact that you walk in knowing that he's going to try to do something to drive you crazy or to shock you.
Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe he'll make his hairspray.
He may. This is. I'll tell you. I like this movie. You don't like this movie.
I don't. Middle of the road.
But of all the films that he has made so far, this may be, for me, the sweetest and the most, you know, tender.
It's the only one I've seen, so I can't compare it. I never got around to Irreversible or I Stand Alone or End of the Void. So,
a guy named Murphy.
Yeah.
He's an American film student.
Right.
He's in Paris.
Ooh.
He enters a relationship with a...
Tempestuous.
She is essentially the French magical pixie, manic pixie dream girl. Ah. She is perfect in every way, seemingly. Her name is Elektra.
Right.
Of course it is.
Now, the guy, Murphy, is played by an actor named Carl Glusman, who's been in some things and who's got like 7 movies lined up.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, he's a real actor. He's not just some guy Gaspar Noé pulled off the street and said, hey, do you want to show your boner in a movie? You know,
in 3D.
Yeah.
Love 3D boner.
He becomes involved with Elektra. Their relationship comes to an end. That is not a spoiler because the film begins with Murphy's relationship and parenthood of a child with a woman named Omi. And he hates Omi and he wants out of the relationship with Omi. He wants to go back to the time he loved the best, which was with Elektra. And you can tell right away the opening shots of him and Omi in their bedroom. There is an exact replica model of the Love Hotel from Enter the Void sitting on a table next to their bed.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah. And there is also a distinct absence of crazy film posters in their house.
Which his previous apartment had in every single shot of the film.
Yeah.
Who has a giant Solo poster over their bed? I ask you.
A real cool dude. That's who. So anyway. Elektra is missing. And no one knows where she is. And he's on the phone with Elektra's mother, who hates him because he kind of sort of got her back hooked on drugs.
Oops.
Well, and I think also kind of sort of got Omi pregnant while they were still together.
Also that.
Yikes.
Murphy's not a good guy.
No.
Okay.
But he takes the last memento that he has from Elektra, some opium that she left him. And he falls into a haze of memory about their relationship. And that is the bulk of the film. And the bulk of the memories consist of them banging it out nonstop. Now, when I say this, I am not telling you that there is simulated sex in this movie. I'm telling you that there is actual real sex in this movie.
Penetrative,
orgasmic on everyone's part, if you know what I mean.
In all 3 dimensions.
To describe this in a non-swears clean podcast is to describe things that you know about from pornography, things that you have seen in pornography in this film.
Wow.
But this is real sex. The actors are really having sex and they are really finishing when they have sex.
This is not an X-rated movie. This is an NC-17 rated movie.
Yeah.
Oh.
In other words, it is an art film. And
is
there
it rated at all?
I don't think it's rated at all. But no. What I'm saying is that it is an actual pornography in that it has a narrative and, you know, it is...
Yeah. And those are incredibly...
No one mentions a copy machine or delivers a pizza.
As the saying goes, the difference between art and pornography is the lighting. And the lighting is really good.
The sex, while it is, as I said, it's real sex happening in real time, performed by these actors.
A lot.
It serves this narrative function of both being a source of comfort for Carl, or Carl's the name of the actor, sorry. Murphy is the name of the character. Mm-hmm. And also giving you sort of an insight into what kind of guy he is, because what he remembers is just the banging.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what he remembers. He's like, oh, I loved you so much, baby. I loved her so much. She was the love of my life. All I'm thinking about is how much we used to have sex.
But right. even in that context, he sort of shows what a jerk he was.
Yeah.
Because, like, at one point, he gets jealous about, because she hooks up with an ex, and he beats him up at his art gallery opening. And the cops are...
The guy being beaten up is Gaspar Noé.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. Yeah. Okay.
So also shows his erect penis in this film,
yes.
Just like everyone else.
So, hey, he wants a shot.
In for a penny. So the cops have to arrest him, but they actually sympathize with him and take him out for a drink later and tell him, hey, you should go to this sex club where, like, she can do stuff and you can do stuff and, you can watch, you have to be jealous, blah, blah, blah. So, of course, he takes her there, and naturally he gets jealous.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even though he's... So he's a jerk. There was another.
If only he had written a song about it like Nick Jonas instead.
Hot.
You know, they have some three ways, some that go better than others.
Well, the way he becomes involved with Omi is that
that's everybody, right?
Originally, yeah, she has a three way.
She's their neighbor and they have a three way with her.
Yeah. Which, that's so really, dumb. Don't ever have a three-way with your neighbor.
Exactly.
Idiots.
That's not going to end well, ever.
That's like 101 stuff.
You're sharing an elevator. Come on.
Well, these people are at the 101 stuff level because they're young and they're feeling it out in their own sort of dumb, stumbling, cruel, despicable way.
And one thing you never see happen is him making any film. He just keeps talking about
it
and having great posters.
Oh, no, that's the worst.
Yeah.
And there's a baby named Gaspar in the movie, and Gaspar Noé's character's last name is Noé.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, stop it.
that almost just seems lazy. Like somebody, he wanted to go home.
They even have a conversation. Oh, Gaspar, I like that name. Like, seriously. Seriously.
That's so lame.
I'm a big fan of this film. And I don't know what the critical reception is to this movie, but I'm a big Gaspar Noé fan, and I love that he is willing to sort of lay it all open, because he has said in interviews that it's kind of autobiographical, that he feels an identification with the Murphy character.
I'm glad I saw it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
They're very interesting. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I don't know that it all works. But whatever.
I guarantee you that cosmically he's going to know to listen to this podcast because we're talking about it.
If you like...
Gaspar, that's a cool name. Boo.
If you like him the way I like him and you're a fan of Enter the Void and Irreversible and I Stand Alone... and earlier, you know, short stuff.
You'll be down for this.
I think you'll be down for this. I mean, it's not extreme in the way that those other films are, because those other films are jolting experiences.
Well, would you
and
say
would
this be a good starter Noé then, or no?
Maybe. You might find yourself, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were kind of bored by the repetitive sex scenes, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Right, and I was not, because I felt like they served that narrative and sort of tonal purpose.
I mean, you know, for me, I think, I know you didn't like this movie as much as I did, but a movie that I found more successful in terms of integrating sex into a narrative and letting the sex scenes themselves reflect upon the characters and say things about the characters that would have taken pages and pages of dialogue in the way that like a musical number can convey emotions or whatever, now I'm blanking.
Short Bus.
No. That was okay, but no. It's directed by.
Need to take a break and look it up?
By Travis Matthews. He made Interior Leather Bar.
I
Want Your Love. Thank you.
All right.
I Want Your Love. I think is a better movie doing what this movie is setting out to do. But that's just me.
Well, all right.
All right.
This is from Ralph. Congratulations on the 10-year anniversary of your wonderful podcast.
Happy 100th birthday, Jackie Chan.
D. White is 100% correct.
The end.
There's actually more to that sentence. When he says that you have the best podcast of all, it's true, we do. We do. I've listened to a lot of others over the past 10 years, and I have lost interest in all of them pretty quickly. D. White's pretentious pontificating and A. Duralde's smug superiority never fail to raise my spirits and keep me coming back for more. My favorite moments and best memories of the show are the times you've shared my letters with your audience. I know that you and your listeners really enjoy hearing from me and value my opinion. That being said, I'll definitely try to write more frequently in the near future. Just try to contain your excitement, A. Duralde. Continued success, you two. Here's to another 10 years of stimulating commentary and total self-absorption. Thanks, Ralph.
Wow.
Way to go, Ralph.
Thanks.
Ralph, that's a great name. Wow.
When can we read more letters from Ralph?
I'm counting the days.
I'm not coming back here until you have another one.
We're going to have one every week.
Those are all the movies, so let's power through the letters.
Are we done with the movies?
Yeah, that's everything.
That's all.
Let's do the rest of the letters, and then we'll do our DVD picks.
Quiet Halloween weekend.
Yeah. Well, that's Halloween's a Saturday night.
Correct.
You ain't going to release a big movie on a weekend when the Saturday night audience is not going to the movie theater.
Correct.
So you're going to release...
Maybe Jem and the Holograms can make it up this time around.
Yeah.
Just drop LSD or something and go see Jem and the Holograms. That's scarier than anything you could have seen.
Did I have a DVD pick this week? What was
you,
I?
Yes.
What did I say it was going to be?
Every time. We have other anniversary letters, though. I thought we were going
to... Yeah, we got a lot of them.
We're going to get after you want to do the
DVD. We'll do it.
All right. Your DVD pick is Do I Sound Gay?
Oh, that's right.
What's that?
It's a documentary that came out earlier this year, this summer, as a matter of fact. It's called Do I Sound Gay?
No.
And it's, yeah. And the, I saw it and I got a chance to interview the filmmaker, a guy named David Thorpe. And it's still actually, it just opened in England theatrically.
Huh.
And so I guess it's on DVD here in the United States, which is great. And it is a documentary about the phenomenon of...
Gay voice.
Gay voice.
Interesting.
How can you clock somebody as gay from hearing them talk?
I can't wait to see this.
And it's fascinating. It really is a fascinating film. He and I had a really interesting discussion, most of which did not end up in the article that I wrote.
And then you Q&A'd him.
And then I did the Q&A at the opening night screening up here at the Sundance Sunset. And, it's a really interesting film. And, you know, it brought up all these experiences that I have had just in the reverse.
Sure.
Of gay guys thinking that I'm trying to not sound gay, and actual straight people accusing me of trying to not sound gay. Weird moments in my life.
God, people are funny, aren't they?
When I have encountered folks who just simply do not know enough gay people. Because if you know enough gay men, you know that there's a variety of voices out there.
Yeah.
There's a variety of self-expression. And it's...
We cover the waterfront.
Yeah, you're...
Literally.
All kinds of... All kinds of ways of sounding gay. I have gay voice because I'm gay, and this is my voice. You know what I mean?
Very nice.
Yeah, what's your DVD?
My DVD pick this week is a movie called Everlasting Love. It's a second feature film from a Catalan filmmaker named Marcel Ferrez. His first movie, Animals, I liked a lot, and I still want you to watch it, Dave White. And it won an award at Outfest a couple years ago. And then this new one actually won the jury prize for best dramatic feature this year, which was great because it's the kind of movie that... won the jury prize for dramatic feature, and I think came in last in the audience prize. Like, it's a movie that people walked out of and were mad about. But it's great.
Right.
Yeah, and it's about a Spanish school teacher who gets involved with one of his students in, like, this sort of cruisy park, and then kind of decides to move on from the relationship, and the student's not quite done with him yet, and it's very Stranger by the Lake, and it's creepy and cool, and
the kid will not be ignored.
Exactly. Yeah.
They never will.
So totally worth checking out, and that's out this week new. Do you have a DVD you want to share?
You know, I don't. I wasn't paying attention to DVD releases, but you know what this conversation has made me think of is that speaking of films that made people furious, I was a judge at the Monterrey Mexico International Film Festival.
Nice.
And it was a challenging festival to be a part of. And one of the instances that was the most challenging was sitting in a screening of a film that was nearly black. Like, there was almost no light in the film. And I thought, the filmmakers couldn't have intended this.
Right.
And it made it difficult to understand, but I've never... You want to pause?
No.
Nah.
Yay, delivery! So the thing is that I worked so hard to understand it.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out the projection just let the cap on the lens.
Yeah, something like that. It was projected incorrectly.
Oh, really? Ah.
And it turned out that a movie called Plan Sex and All that it was... on the surface, just kind of like a grindhouse thriller. It was actually a really interesting take on Mexican politics.
Ah.
It turned into an entirely different film. But on the way home from the screening, my fellow judges were a little bit more artistically inclined than I am. And I said, well, I thought it was interesting, and I was surprised that even projected incorrectly, I wanted to keep watching. And one of the women, you know, that makes, like, films about, as Dave would say, like, fancy people drinking tea, goes, oh, it was just like Polanski. It was so meaningful in its darkness. It was like Steve and I kind of sideways glancing at each other. Like,
sorry, that was on accident.
Well, that's like, I remember one time, have you ever seen Pink Narcissus?
Yeah.
James Bidgood. He was in kind of a Kenneth Anger sort of like these really gorgeous, very experimental, non-narrative kind of films. And one time in Dallas's Landmark Theater at the time, the Inwood was doing like a midnight show, and they screened it for me because I was reviewing for the gay paper there, and they wanted me to write it up. One of the reels got repeated like twice in a row. And I was like, is this intentional? And like, it could have been intentional. I didn't know.
You didn't know. Well, and apparently after Plan Sex and All, the people were so angry. The Q&A was furious, and the director was getting it from all sides. And these people hadn't even seen the film, basically.
Was the director telling them, hey, this isn't what it's supposed to look like?
Or? I don't think the director even bothered to mention it, because these people were like, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy. I rewatched it, and we gave it a prize.
Well, all right.
Anyway.
Well, all right.
Is it on DVD?
I hope so, but probably not.
Okay.
This is from James in London.
Hey, James.
James is the listener who sends us candy from England annually.
We love James.
Yes. We're into James. He's this whole list. This list can double as a drinking game. Anytime Dave gives himself a new nickname. Anytime Alonzo says to Dave, you're the worst. Anytime Dave says, here's the thing. Any review of Crazy Religious movie or Madea film.
Yes.
Anytime a guest pisses off a significant portion of the audience by daring not to like the same things as everyone else. Thanks, Manola.
Oh, I was thinking, I thought he meant
Jack.
Jack Morris.
Although we did get letters from people who all love Manola.
Yes, yeah. And Jack, too.
I told her that yesterday. We went to we met at the new Frederick Wiseman.
Yeah, Manola got a big face full of us yesterday. She watched a 3-hour doc with Dave, and then she sat next to me for Trumbo.
What a sweet day for her.
Yeah, she was a great day for her. No, but I told her, I was like, we had like 3 people email us and tell us that you're their favorite thing on our show. Anytime the mic levels are mentioned, that's every episode. Anytime the heat is mentioned, well, that's when we're
most
having
of the year,
a heat wave. Anytime the dogs downstairs start barking up a storm, they're gone. They moved away.
Oh, God.
Yeah, thank God. Anytime a helicopter passes overhead or crazy traffic passes by outside. Anytime Alonzo and Dave hate a film so much that they deliberately spoil every plot point so that you don't go see it. Any passing mentions of Los Angeles eateries worth visiting, it was this podcast that introduced me to the wonders of Irv's Burgers.
Yay!
Anytime the tape machine ate the tape during the opening music. Thank you for 5 wonderful years, gents. Here's to many more. Now, please make haste with this membership that you've been speaking of so that I can send you all the money. I have not forgotten. I promised you a parcel of chocolate bounty. Mm-hmm. Let me know when L.A. drops to a temperature where chocolate won't dissolve as soon as you open the packet. That would be December.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're lucky.
Thank you, James.
Yay.
This is from Justin. Below are some of my favorite moments from your podcasts over the years. Number one, the arguments over That's My Boy and American Ultra.
Those are argue-worthy films, yeah, by the way.
Exactly. Dave losing it over the name Imogen Poots.
It's possible not to lose it.
How can you not?
Right. It's impossible.
When it's one of the great names of cinema. Imogen Poots. And who's the other one? The Tuppence...
Tuppence Middleton.
Tuppence Middleton. She's another great one. 3, both of your 2014 and 2013 year-in-review shows with Manola Dargis and Robert Abele. That's from Justin.
Yay.
Woo. Favorite moments from Daniel. The moments that come to mind were your reviews of Girl, You Got Some AIDS.
Yes, absolutely.
Ghost Wife, Stonewall starring War Horse. Also, there was a review of one of those wedding romantic comedies with either Kate Hudson or Jennifer Lopez that was really funny. Here's looking forward to more.
Cuckoo Bananas one of with John Krasinski.
Something Borrowed.
Right?
Oh, right, yeah.
Something Borrowed is out of control.
That was Dave in rare
form. We don't talk enough about Something Borrowed.
As a society, we don't.
Yeah.
As a culture, we've let that one slip through.
I'll tell you, though, that had Kate Hudson in it, right?
Hudson and Jennifer Goodwin.
Hell yeah.
Hudson has been in Something Borrowed, Bride Wars,
yes.
And A Little Bit of Heaven.
Oof, yeah.
Yep.
And now Rock the Casbah.
I want to buy workout gear from her just because I want to thank her for just
the years of pleasure.
Yeah, complete bananagram pleasure.
Does she have a line of workout gear?
She does.
Yeah, she does.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Is it so you can look like you're on the billboard for Raising Helen with the Uggs?
Yeah.
It's very strappy.
This is from Dustin. Hello, David Alonzo. Each year in northwestern Wisconsin, I go through all 4 seasons to the most extreme to the most mild. It is that time of year where my wife is beginning to complain that the temperature is dropping to 40 degrees and the sweatshirts are coming out. I do not mind anything about winter besides driving to work in a blizzard, but what I do mind is come the month of May, the snow begins to melt and the sun becomes hot. By June, the humidity is in full swing. And it becomes so hot, I sweat the moment I step out the door from the nice air conditioning. This is all a preface to my favorite moments on the show. Dave thoroughly complaining about the temperature and telling a long and detailed story about how hot it is in California, only to hear Alonzo subtly reply in the background, "It's really hot." Throughout the summer months, this becomes a constant, and I laugh every time because I feel exactly how Dave feels. I openly complain to my wife on a daily basis about the heat and humidity. It pretty much makes me a grumpy person. These are by far some of my favorite moments over the years. Thanks for the laughs, guys. I am sure, like many other listeners out there, we feel like we both know you and follow your lives and relationships through your podcast, along with listening to movie reviews. Since I am a first-time emailer, I will just throw out that my favorite movie of all time, Pan's Labyrinth.
Woo!
Woo!
And this tonight, I will be meeting Doug Jones at Crypticon, Minneapolis.
Nice. Oh my God, how cool. Doug Jones is going to fold you in his big, friendly spider arms.
Yeah.
Hug you.
Thank you. That's from Dustin.
Thank you, Dustin.
Who gets to live in northwestern Wisconsin. Can you imagine how great the autumn and winter is in northwestern Wisconsin?
And the drinking.
Yeah, but, yeah. But then the muggy summer,
and
apparently.
And all the cheeses.
Oh.
Oh, cheeses.
Just thinking about all that cheese now.
Drinking the champagne, thinking about cheese. What a fancy life this is. Happy 5 years. Yay.
Oh, look, it's a letter from Noah Whitaker.
Oh, you don't say.
You guys are the absolute best. I can't imagine another podcast that brightens my day up more. I love you too. Anyways, two of my favorite linoleum knife mints, moments and knife put together.
Nice.
Are these.
Portmanteau.
Number one, when you guys are just about to start talking about Cinderella, Alonzo begins to have the church giggles at Dave after he puts a bag of ice on his head.
The church giggles.
I totally remember
it
that.
It felt good to hear some sliver of joy from Alonzo for once.
Ouch.
It was all the more powerful when the two of you began laughing together. I got misty-eyed after listening to that.
Aww.
No, I didn't. Number two, the time when Dave said that I was his favorite listener after I was buttering up linoleum knife with praise in my letter. It greatly affected me, not only because you are Dave White, but because what you guys do for a living is what I want to do for a living. You are fantastic, Mr. White. You too, Mr. Duraldi. Noah, no one pays people to write movie reviews anymore.
Stop now.
Find another job that makes you happy.
Love movies all you want as a hobby.
Happy 5-year linoleum knife, Serene, he says. To the next 5 years of a podcast of the cinema with love and movie tickets and award screeners, Noah Whitaker, who is 15, black, residing in Long Beach, California, heart emoji.
Yay, Noah! They're right about the movie reviews, though.
Ain't nobody going to pay you anything.
These are sad times.
That was it. That's
all right, wow.
That's everything.
What a lovely bunch of listeners. That's a great bunch of emails.
We have great listeners.
We do. Thank you guys for writing in.
Even that one that said we were self-absorbed.
Yes, well.
Well.
I mean, we are.
Are they wrong?
We'll have to own that one a little bit. But thanks to everybody for listening. Because I've said this before, but it's
I like
totally...
to think of myself as self-possessed. It's knowing where I'm going.
It's completely true that if no one was listening to this thing, we would have just stopped doing it. But you are, so we didn't. And Grey Drake, thank you for everything
yes.
in the past and everything in the future.
And all the future things you're going to do for us.
Yes. To be part of such a magical endeavor
to
is one of the best
children
things.
Of the world.
And all the parents.
And all the parents.
All the parents.
Where can people find you online, Grey? Where can't they?
Well, my Twitter is GRAEDRAKE, and you can also listen to me on the Rotten Tomatoes podcast. Mm.
Grey spelled wrong. And Drake, like the rapper.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the male duck.
Or a wingless dragon.
How you liking Hotline Bling?
Huh?
Don't hum me.
I don't understand any of the nouns that you just used.
I stopped following
adjective.
Drake's career after he left Degrassi.
You know what?
I'm kind of into Hotline Bling.
I'll quote you on that.
Is it twerking on Fleek?
It's totally twerking on Fleek. Now, here's the thing. The thing I like about Hotline Bling is the music. Like, I wish Drake wasn't in the song.
Maybe there's an instrumental version that for
yeah,
DJs.
I actually went to iTunes and was like, is there like a dub remix side with no vocal, no Drake? Because he's singing, right? He's not rapping.
Right.
He's just like, baby, baby. I'm like, stop that. You go behave, Jimmy. Degrassi.
People would probably
but
say
that,
the same
but
thing
the
about
song
me
is
if
like
I was
this
involved
slow
in it.
Jam. It's really good.
Find it maybe on YouTube.
Or there's a karaoke version.
That's the thing. I bet it exists. You can also find me on YouTube, too.
Yeah, that's you can.
Look up our Rotten Tomatoes channel, and you can see all these interviews that Dave and Alonzo are talking about.
Yes,
that I do for them. Everything I do it for you.
They are stunning. And yes,
all linoleum knife.
Gray and Matt over at the Rotten Tomatoes podcast. Always fun to listen to. Also, check out ChristyTheMirror.com and the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney and the Schmoes Know and Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley and the Sewers of Paris and the Joel Ryan thing and the Brady Sinellis podcast and Fat Guys of the Movies and the Criterion cast and Film Spotting SVU and the Game Night Guys and Secretly Timid.
Sewers of Paris.
I said that.
Okay.
Thanks again, Blue, for the awesome theme music and for the sous vide that time. BLEUTOPIA.com. Blue just released a new iTunes version of his latest album, To Hell With You, and one of the extra singles is he does a cover of an Owsley track.
Oh.
Which four people listening will know what the hell I'm talking about. But Owsley was this amazing pop singer who I was a big fan of and is no longer with us. And Blue did a cover of one of his songs. It's really great. Anyway, moving on. You can subscribe to the show, of course, at iTunes. Please, please, please write us a review. It helps people find the show. We thank everybody who has been doing it so far. But more would be great. You can also listen, stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us positive feedback there. Like our Facebook page, join our Linoleum Knife group page on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Oh, and huge news that we totally buried at the end, and I'm worried that we already lost people because they turned off when I started plugging other podcasts. The new...
They don't turn it off until the very end.
Our latest Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife commentary track of Snoopy Come Home is now available.
Yeah.
Drop us $1.99 via PayPal to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include your email address and let us know where you want to send it. You can also, for $1.99 each, pick up our other commentary tracks for... Gentlemen for Blondes, The Poseidon Adventure, What's Up Doc, Clue, Two for the Road, Josie and the Pussycats, The Apple, White Christmas, and Santa Claus. Did I leave one out?
Santa Claus!
Anyway, there's a whole bunch. And so, yes, we have Snoopy Come Home coming out just in time for the release of the Peanuts movie. So enjoy that.
Woo!
And coming up very soon is our Christmas episode that we do every year. Do we want to?
What are you talking about?
Our Christmas commentary track.
Oh.
Do we want to tell? No, okay, no. We'll tell you soon what that is.
You'll get that information soon enough.
So yeah. So this has been great, and
you forgot something.
Oh, and good heavens! We are accepting pre-orders for the audiobook, the long-awaited audiobook of Dave White's memoir, Exile in Guyville, which drops November 5th.
Yes.
I like saying it's dropping.
It drops.
It does drop.
My book.
My single is dropping.
It's dropping. Yeah.
Drops on November 5th.
November 5th. Pre-order it now.
Exile in Guyville book.
You can find the link on our Facebook page, or you can go to exileinguyvillebook.tumblr.com.
Whoa.
Pay like, what you want.
Like singles and testicles.
Pay what you want.
They
it's
drop
a dollar. It's a dollar.
What?
Or it's $1 million. What do you get?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Pay what you want. Make it rain.
Pay what you want. You're like Louis C.K. I'm going to give you $2,500.
Yeah. Or make it drizzle. It's up to you. All right. So here's to another 5 years at
Yay!
Least.
Yay!
Thank you for joining us, Fred Drake. Thank you for all you do. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Dave White, for doing this with me every week.
You're welcome.
You're the worst.
Goodbye.